Hello, Fuji lovers, Tomasz here. Yes, we are back. Episode number 23 of Fuji Love Podcast is here, and we have a wonderful conversation for you today. Jens Krauer connected with Isabelle Courtier, official Fujifilm ex-photographer from Belgium, who travels around the world to make photo reportages for NGOs like Doctors Without Borders and Caritas. Her work has been featured in several magazines and campaigns. Her images have been exhibited in China, India, in France and in Belgium. And she has also won several awards for her work. Before we jump into today's episode, here are just a few words about our sponsors. And I would like to thank them personally for supporting all our efforts here at Fujilove. 500px. Wonderful community of photographers and the world's leading photo sharing site. I have been sharing my own photographs on several different platforms, and 500px is definitely the one which I recommend the most. Your photos will shine and look really beautiful on their site. So join millions of photographers who share already their photos, learn and grow together with them every day. 500px.com. Today's episode of Fujilove Podcast is brought to you by Alien Skin Software, makers of Exposure X3. Exposure is the award-winning RAW photo editor and organizer that offers gorgeous, non-destructive editing, powerful organizing tools, hundreds of authentic film looks, and fast, easy-to-use workflow. Exposure X3 is now the Fujilove photo editing software of choice. I have personally switched my entire photo editing workflow to Exposure, and I couldn't be more happy. So try Exposure X3 free today. Go to alienskin.com. If you decide to purchase it, make sure you use the coupon code FUJILOVE to get 10% off. And now let's jump into today's episode. Here is Jens Krauer in his conversation with Isabelle Courtier. Enjoy.
So welcome to the Fujilove podcast. Today's guest is my friend Isabelle Courtier, who is an NGO photographer. Welcome, Isabelle, to the Fujilove podcast.
Thanks a lot, Jens.
And let's dive right in with the first question, which is, who is Isabelle Courtier?
So I am a photographer, mainly working for humanitarian organizations around the world.
And before you became a photographer, what did you do?
I was working as an architect. And I really love the aesthetics that comes along with that job. Because, you know, while creating spaces, you work with proportions and a relation with the people experiencing the spaces you create. You also work with light and how a place or a shape can change depending on the light that touches it. So I really loved it to create harmony. But the work and like the long hours, the long process on the computer, it didn't really make me happy as an architect.
So you decided to become a photographer, and then what was your way into photography?
Well, as I said, being an architect, I missed something. I missed the social contact with people. And that's when I started to study photography after my working hours. And I felt that I could start creating this harmony I was talking about in collaboration with people. And practically, it was when I was working in an architecture office in Dublin that I had the courage to quit my job. So I couldn't quit my job in my home country, Belgium, because of, you know, expectations of friends and family. So when I was abroad, I could quit. And I bought, I think it was the first model of the Fujifilm Instax camera about 15 years ago. And I started as a street vendor selling this kind of Polaroid shots to the people. And it was in Ireland, so the people are pretty pale. So I put a duct tape on the flash to make the people look a bit suntanned. And they just loved it. And I loved it too. And it's actually by doing this kind of work that I learned to get out there, to approach people on the streets and to become a photographer.
And after you've been photographing people on the streets, how did the way into the NGO photography work? Which way did you go to start doing meaningful work?
After Dublin, I came back to Belgium and worked as a professional photographer. But it's only when I met my husband that I got in touch with humanitarian work. So he left on his first mission that was in Burundi in Africa with Doctors Without Borders. And after 6 months, I could finally visit him. And I had taken contact with the communication officer of the NGO to ask permission if I could make a photo reportage of the activities that they were running there. And after I got back from that reportage, they just published it straight away. So I was super excited doing this kind of photography. For me, in the first place, I had entered another level in that collaboration with people. I found it fascinating to connect with people from other cultures. And I also felt that my photography could have a bigger purpose than only the aesthetic part of it. I felt like I helped telling a story to people who otherwise wouldn't know or care about these stories.
So you went to a lot of places. Can you give us an oversight to which countries you've been visiting and roughly what kind of main issues you've been working on?
I've been visiting mainly African countries. I got a whole list like Ethiopia, Uganda, South Sudan, Congo, Zimbabwe, Ghana, Burkina Faso, the Central African Republic. And now I live in South Africa. But also I went to the Philippines, Nepal and Brazil. And since the refugee crisis, I went to countries like Jordan and Lebanon. And I also photographed refugees in Belgium itself. And actually, since I moved here in South Africa, I've done a lot of work in Latin and Central America, like Honduras, El Salvador, Peru, Ecuador. So it's been everywhere almost. And the topics I covered are mainly linked to poverty, climate change, ongoing conflicts, or the lack of healthcare.
Wow, that's quite a list of countries that you've been on. Are there any subjects that you personally care about most?
Well, all subjects, they touch me. But the more I come to know about these topics, and especially when I meet the people in this situation, the more I care about it.
Do you pitch projects you personally care about, or do you get requests to cover something?
I usually get requests from the NGO, and so they send me out to document the things out there.
And once you're back, what are your photographs used for?
So the pictures are mainly used for like fundraising campaigns. And for this, I mainly show the needs of the people in precarious situations. But on the other hand, my photos are also used for a general communication about the activities of the NGO. And it doesn't mean, because that's what people often think, that I always bring sad stories. No, that's not true. I often show the positive result of an intervention of an NGO. And actually, I have never thought that I could make a difference to people's lives on a big scale. I always felt that my mission in life is to spread my love and my energy to the people just surrounding me. I never believed that I could change the world like an idealist, but that I could just do my own little bits. And if I see now that with a campaign where my photos are used, an NGO can collect money to make so much difference in people's life, that makes me really happy. And finally, for me, not much changed because I'm still working on that small scale. So, yeah, it's really beautiful for me.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing when you can use your photography for something meaningful. I would be interested in how do you prepare for such an assignment? Like, what kind of research do you do? What kind of information do you collect before you get on that journey?
Yeah, I do some research like on the culture and the customs so I don't behave weird or I'm dressed inappropriate. I will also wear super strong shoes because you never know where you're stepping. Like sometimes there's drug needles or broken glass or barbed wire. You can catch tetanus, you know. So for these things, I'll check if I have all my vaccines up to date and take a mosquito repellent. I also have to check if I need a visa, if I need to apply beforehand for a visa. I check the weather conditions because even you go to the south, you think it's always hot, but it isn't. It can be really cold and wet. And another preparation, I learned the basic words of the local language to show the respect to the people I visit. And it helps me also in doing my work in a more personal way than to work constantly with a translator.
What kind of equipment do you bring? Because you said there's this hot, it's cold, mm-hmm. it's dusty and all these kind of things. So technically, what do you bring? And also, since you're shooting mirrorless, how many batteries do you bring along on such a trip?
Yeah. Well, I do have like a standard package, which is well overthought because I always need to have a backup plan. Because if you work in these kind of remote areas, things, if they break down, there's no opportunity to have it repaired, and there's also no time for it because we often work on a very tight schedule with a team. So my package is like two X-T2s I take with me, and then I work often with zoom lenses like the 16-55 2.8 and the 50-140 2.8. I like to work with them because they're very fast, they're versatile, and in low light conditions I found that they perform very well, and also they have a very nice bokeh on them. But apart from these zoom lenses, I also take a series of primes because I love to work with primes, and on the same time they work as a backup if one of my zoom lenses would break down. And as primes, I really love to work with the 40mm 2.8, the 23 1.4 and the 35 1.4. And I sometimes also take the 56 1.2.
Did any of that equipment ever break down on you somewhere in the middle, in the field, in Africa, or did it always work out?
No, actually it didn't. I dropped my 35mm and really like the shadow, the cap was all cracked, but the lens still worked. So that was amazing. It's still working up to now. That's like 2 years ago. Sweaty hands, dust. You know, I take them everywhere without any problem.
Yeah, I know the issue with the rubber on the X-T1. I think it happened to many of us. Fortunately, on the X-T2, that doesn't happen anymore. So
no, indeed. No, I did really intensive tests, so I can tell.
How much time do you spend in one location? And is there any locations that you regularly go back to for projects where you have kind of follow-ups?
Well, it depends. Often when I'm on an assignment, there's not so much time for the photo shoots, like maybe an hour or two to cover a whole range of activities. So that's when I need to connect with people in a very fast way. And I need to make them feel at ease very quickly because I want them to show them as natural as possible. So what I do then I push to spend the night on site with a family to document their life from within. And when I work on a personal project, of course I can go how many times I want. And I'm currently working on a personal project, so I do that sometimes 2 to 3 hours per week I spend there.
Even if you stay there overnight, you still have to win the trust of the people. So how do you connect with them and make them feel comfortable around you?
As I said, I always learn a little bit of the basic language as a respect to them. And also, I often pronounce it completely wrong. So that makes people really laugh from the start. And it's like an icebreaker. And when I'm with them, I also show a genuine interest in what they do. And I'm very curious as a person. So for me, everything, even the simple aspects of somebody's life, is interesting to me. So I show them that. And also in my way of talking, I try to talk to people in a positive way. So even if it's in a refugee camp, I tell them that I admire their strength and courage to live in these difficult circumstances. So, yeah, I think I'm just open and honest to the people, and I listen to their stories. I show respect.
When you're with them sometimes, do you discover things that you would like to cover? And if so, do you have the freedom to do so? Or are there limitations in what you are supposed to cover in your work?
Yeah, I'm often interested in going deeper into a story. Because often a problem, if doesn't go on its own, there's always side problems which I want to know more about. But since I often work on a very tight time schedule, there's no time to go more in depth. And when I'm with the people on my own, there's often no translator anymore. So it's very simple then, the language. So yeah, there's often just no opportunity to go deeper.
FujiLife podcast is brought to you by FujiLife magazine, the number one publication for passionate Fujifilm X-series photographers from around the globe. To find out more about the FujiLife magazine, visit fujilife.com.
Do you feel that you are more free when you don't have a translator? Is there more room for personal connection at the end of the day?
Definitely, yes. Yes, I found a big difference. Because I think as a photographer, it's the energy that you bring to the people and to the connection. And if there's a third person involved, it's another energy. So I really prefer to have as soon as possible that one-on-one feeling.
Because even if the communication gets more simple, it's actually probably more direct and more honest.
Yes, 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 definitely, yeah.
Is there other limitations working for an NGO that you wish they would not be there?
Well, besides the time frame, the luxury, I think, is when I work on an assignment, I'm driven with a car, with a team, we go to places where for me, it would be very difficult to reach on my own. But on the other hand, I'm limited to the places I'm taking to. That might be a limitation. And also often because of security issues, like we have to be home on time or we cannot go there. And that's a limitation I sometimes feel. Yeah, I forget about the security and I want to go further. So then they have to hold me back.
With all the people you meet during all these assignments, have you made friends? I mean, local friends that were part of projects during your work?
Yes, yes, I do. Yeah, and nowadays with Facebook, I'm still in touch with people around the world. And that's really amazing.
Is there a location that you are most connected to with people still?
Maybe there was one family, yes. It was in Lebanon. We were very close to the border with Syria. And I interviewed like the head of a family. It was this super hospitable family. And the man, he wanted to talk on the video I was shooting. He wanted to thank the NGO for the work they had done to him. And I was working for that NGO. And at the end of the video, he just bursted out into tears. So I stopped filming. And yeah, it was very touching to me. Because I saw he was probably once a very proud man and now he was working in this shelter for 5 years with the family, like under plastic sheeting. And with this family, I'm still on Facebook following them and giving replies and sending them love. They became friends.
So that might be also a family that you could go back and visit and do a follow-up of the official story where you have no limitations attached to you.
Indeed. And actually with this family, I tried. So after the mission, I contacted the NGO locally to ask if I could get permission to go back to the refugee camp. And I wanted to go with my husband to go in depth for like 3 weeks and live with them. But because of the security issues, nobody advised us to go back there. And without the protection of an NGO, that would be really too dangerous. So finally, we decided not to go there again.
I see. Do you ever have bring emotionally things home when you come back from an assignment? Do you deal sometimes with what you've seen or what you've experienced? Is that rather hard or does it come easy to you?
I take it home. But I think I'm a quite positive person and I deal with the situation in I approach the people with love, understanding and respect. And for me, I feel I give something to the people and I photograph them. I give them a platform. So I have more a feeling that I could do something good. So I take more that feeling home rather than getting lost in the situation is so bad and I cannot do anything about it.
Okay, so you have a sense of purpose and you're aware of the fact that you actually just try to do something good about the situation you've been in.
Yes, Yes, because as I told you, I don't believe I can change the world, but I do believe I can make a difference on a small scale with the people I meet to give them a nice feeling, and then afterwards with the photos on a bigger scale.
Mm-hmm. Is there future projects that you want to cover or any story that you have decided to follow up?
Yes, actually, I'm busy working on a project. And I live very close to a township, like a ghetto, as you say, in South Africa. And I work on a project where I'm going to look for talented people living there. And because of the lack of networks and the living condition, they often stay under the radar. So with my photos of them, I want to give them a platform. And I hope I can influence how other people look at people living in the townships in a more positive way. And yeah, and even on a government level, I hope they might invest more in putting facilities there. So that's a project I'm busy with now.
So you do that between your assignments when you're home. That's just your heart project.
Yes, indeed.
Can I ask you what photography fascinates you personally? What kind of books do you have home? What do you look into? What do you follow in the world of photography?
Actually, I follow the photographers who do the work I am doing. It really fascinates me. It's meaningful. And thanks to their photos, I get to know about stories in the world. Because I'm not a person who would check on the news, but I'm a person who would see a story through pictures. Yeah, I follow more documentary photographers and photojournalists who, yeah, they go out and they really risk their life. And yeah, I really admire them.
As you follow all the photographers' work, would you like to point out some of those and also maybe let us know what is your favorite photographer that inspires you the most?
Oh, yes. My all-time favorite is Sebastião Salgado. He works mainly in black and white. He's an amazing photographer. Besides him, I really appreciate the work of Cédric Gerbehe and Jan Grerup, both also very good in black and white photography, documentary photography, both of them. And in color, I really, really love Chris de Bolde. He's a Dutch photographer. And there's a few females I really admire. There's like Stephanie Sinclair. There's Lindsay Addario. And Brent Sturton is also a great color photographer. Yeah, there's so many.
What comes to my mind actually is Amy Vitale. The reason being, I was in Siena this year. And while sitting there, I actually heard your name. And I thought you were there because you received an honorary award.
I did, yes.
So I was looking for you and thinking maybe Isabel is going to walk in somewhere, but you weren't there.
No, well, it's unfortunately, since I moved all the way to the south, it's a bit far to fly over to receive an award or something like that. So, yeah, and then I miss it that I can't get the chance to talk in real life to a person like Amy Vitale. I would love to meet her. But yeah, maybe next year.
She does amazing work.
Indeed.
She does amazing work. Yes. Also, I totally I agree with your choice of Salgado, which is personally one of my favorites. My only worry with Salgado is that his books are so heavy that I can't bring him anywhere. Mm. But it's beautiful photography.
I did bring one of his thick books here to South Africa. And the latest one of Jan Grerup, it's like maybe a 5 kg book. I also have it here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, but then, are you also addicted to photo books?
Not like you. Just because we're leading a pretty nomadic life, I don't own a lot of stuff. The things I own is like camera gear and some camera books. And then for the rest, I try to travel light.
Now, we talked a lot about your meaningful work, and I'm sure there's people out there who would love to do something meaningful with their photography as well. What advice would you give a young photographer who wants to start out doing work that matters?
Yeah, I would go out first in my own community to learn how to approach people and also to learn how to deal with the ethics that go together with this kind of sensitive work. And from that, if you know you can master it, then I would start building a portfolio and to maybe go abroad if that's what you want. Because in general, what I always learned from the start is what you show is what you're going to be hired for. So
it also means that you can find meaningful things actually in your close environment. You don't have to go very far to find things that communicate.
Definitely, yes. In National Geographic, there was an article on hunters, and I saw it was done in the village next to where my parents live. So I thought, wow, National Geographic just shoots next to my hometown.
In Belgium?
In Belgium, yes.
See, there's interesting things everywhere. You quickly mentioned ethics. Can you share maybe some of your ethics that you apply to your photography?
Yeah, I think respect and a humble behavior as a photographer and not thinking you are worth more than the person you photograph. And it's not because you're from Europe and you come from a richer area in the world that you feel better than the person who was born in another country and doesn't have as much luck as we do. You have that in mind always.
I think if you have the interest in what you photograph, you're not so running into a danger. I think it's important that you care about what you actually photograph.
Yes, to care about and that you love. Because as an advice to a starting photographer, choose a subject that you're going to love to be amongst the people that you're going to photograph. As beginning documentary photographers, I think it's often the topic of people living on the streets or drug addicts or these kind of topics. I think you should be careful about that. Also understand that you are going to be with these people and you're going to connect with the people. So you're going to need to love the place where you're going to go to.
So basically, you should be willing to be with who you photograph. If that's not the case, you're actually just stealing something from somebody rather than sharing the experience and transporting a true message.
Well, I didn't think in the first place of stealing. I was more like, if you choose a topic just to do it with your whole heart, you should love the topic and be willing to understand. Because if ethically I don't agree with a kind of behavior of some people, I don't think I could make a very honest and warm reportage about these people, because maybe I wouldn't like their behavior constantly.
Have you ever been in a situation where you didn't want to take the picture? Because something was wrong or odd or didn't work out for you?
Not really. I didn't take a picture out of respect. That's when I stopped. If it's disrespectful towards the person, if it's humiliating, then I didn't shoot it anymore.
Without going too much into detail, what is can you let us know what kind of situation that was?
It was a girl in a school in the Central African Republic, and she turned a bit mad. She was running around and everybody thought she was a witch. And they were slapping her and pushing her on the floor. And I took some pictures, but then I stopped because it became too humiliating.
But you don't interfere with a situation like this. You stay in an observing seat at that very moment.
Yes, because I couldn't. There was a whole group surrounding her. I would, and I think I did already, like put my camera aside to help somewhere. We had a mass casualty in South Sudan, like a lot of wounded people came into the hospital on the same moment. And then, yeah, you shoot, but then you also see if it's life-saving that you give a hand.
Yeah, so you change from being a photographer actually to helping as a human being present in such a situation.
Yes. And in that case, I think we come back to the subject of where you know to stop. Because I don't think a photograph needs to show a lot of blood to show a situation. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't go to the end to see people suffering in a pile of blood. I don't think that needs to happen just for the, not to humiliate the person on the photo.
Well, I totally agree with you. There's a point where it becomes more sensation seeking than doing anything good to the situation when you take
exactly.
That picture.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Great. So we're running out of time here, but that was a great conversation, and I truly admire the dedication you have towards your work and how heartfelt you cover these kind of things. And if you want to check out Isabel, check out isabelcortier.com. We'll also put a link into the show notes. And as we go towards the end, is there any last words you want to share with the Fujilove community?
We're all Fujifilm shooters, and one of the reasons we swapped is probably because of the small and the discrete size of the Fujifilm camera. So I just want to say a big part of our work is how we behave ourselves and how we approach people. So I hope that we can also behave in the same style that our cameras are made. So I mean that we behave discreet, straightforward, innovative, and that in a kind and a beautiful way, just like our cameras.
That's very true words, and I wouldn't add much to that. Thank you so much, Isabel, and we hear from you soon.
Okay, thank you, Jens. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Fuji Love Podcast. Stay up to date with Fuji Love. Follow our Facebook page and join the Fuji Love Facebook Readers Group. Head over to www.fujilove.com for all the necessary information. Take good care, and we will talk to you next time.